with our month-long emphasis of what in the world are we doing. And we're going to, this is your lucky day. You're going to be glad you came today because you're going to see, you know, we've been talking about those ripples out there on the bulletin and how your involvement here at Sierra really does matter because it's having a rippling effect all across the world, and you're going to hear some of the stories of just how that is, how that's happening. If you look at your bulletin, this week's star is Kevin Hofarth. I won't make him stand up or sing or anything like that, but he is a family physician here in Tahoe, and he donates some of his time to help out at the Pregnancy Assist Center in Tahoe. And he's using, you know, some of the gifts and the grace that God has bestowed upon him to help other people who are in need, and doing exactly what 1 Peter 4:10 says of using those graces to serve others, and in that way honoring God. So check out his story on the bulletin. We've got a special treat today, for me especially. We've got Aaron Palmatier. That's a picture of he and his family, Nancy and Manuel and Karina. And Aaron and I have been buddies for, I'd say, at least 15 years. I don't know. I was trying to remember, and I honestly can't remember that far back. We've done a lot of traveling together. We've worked on mission projects as youth pastors, and then you know, we tricked him into becoming a full-time missionary to Mexico, and he's been with missions to the Americas and now known as Missions Door for over 10 years. I know that. And he is the international ministry director. I remember last week I told you we had to change the name of our mission because we're not just the Americas anymore. We've got a lot of work going on internationally, and you're going to hear about some of that this morning. He's been a good friend. We've done a lot of traveling together on mission projects. We've eaten some pretty weird stuff together, and it's been quite a journey. We've argued theology and philosophy of missions, and I tell you, I love what he's involved in and what we're involved in because he is one of the missionaries that we support. So I'm not going to take any more of his time. I want you to come on up and share with us. Aaron Palmatier.
Is this on? Hello? Yeah, it's on. Good. Wasn't sure I was turned on or not, but I am. What in the world are you doing? What a great mission scene. What a great idea. Well, I hope to answer some of those questions for you and let you know what in the world you are doing. You know, with my ministry, which I'll tell you about in a minute, I get an opportunity to travel to a lot of different countries. And I've met with and talked to a lot of your missionaries in various different parts of the world. And as I talk to them, I get an overwhelming feeling when the name of your church comes up, all of them have very similar things to say. Would you like to know what they think about you and your church around the world? I found a passage of scripture that really represents their feelings that they've communicated to me, and I'll share those with you. Grace and peace to you from God our Father and from the Lord Jesus Christ. I thank my God in all remembrance of you, always offering prayer with joy in my every thought of you, in view of your participation in the gospel from the first day until now. For I am confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will perfect it until the day of Jesus Christ. Missionaries and pastors around the world thank God for you guys all the time for your participation in the gospel from the first day until now. Good job. Part of the reason that is because you guys have been on the cutting edge of missions. I don't know if everybody in the church understands exactly what your church does as far as missions, but maybe there's one or two that don't know. So let me fill you in. You guys have been out in front of most churches across the country in your response to missions. One of the main ways you've been doing that is by supporting indigenous missionaries, national missionaries to their own country. You've realized early on that they're the best missionaries. The Guatemalans are the best people to reach the Guatemalans. The Cambodians are the best people to reach the Cambodians. And you've realized that and have rallied behind a lot of national missionaries around the world. Now, traditional missions, you know, maybe 15 years ago, when I first started out as a missionary, or even earlier, 20 years ago, you would take a North American. He would go to Bible school or seminary, get appointed with the mission board, spend maybe a year or two raising support, then go down to a language school, spend a year or two in language school. After he was done with language school, then he'd be ready to go to the mission field. So we got, you know, anywhere from 2 to 3, 4 years invested in this guy. Once he gets to the field, then he'd be struggling with the culture and the culture shock. So say another 2 years until he fully adjusts living in that country. And then he's ready for missions, full time to jump in. But even with all that, after about a 6-year investment, the person will always be seen as an outsider, a foreign missionary. I mean, even though I'm brown and I speak Spanish and I have relatives in Mexico, when we were down there as church planters living in Mexico, they still saw me as an outsider, as a North American. Because that's who I am. That's who I am at my core, my identity. I can't change who I am. I can't change my identity inside. But you all have realized that, and your church realized that early on. And you said, you know, North Americans are great, and they have a place in world missions, but the real cutting edge and front lines is indigenous missionaries, having them lead the way in their country. And you've been doing that. And you've really been, like I said, been an example for many churches around the world. You probably know most of your missionaries, and maybe they've been here to speak. But again, maybe there's a few of you who are not fully aware of everything you are doing around the world. So let me introduce you to a couple people that perhaps you don't know. This is Pedro. He's one of your people. He is your missionary in Silao, Guanajuato. Pedro, I first met in Tijuana. He came up to me and said, "Aaron, I feel God calling me to be a missionary in central Mexico." I said, "Are you sure?" I said, "That is a very tough area to reach. It's less than 1% evangelical." I said, "There's cities of 150,000, 200,000 without one Christian church." I said, "That's a tough area." He said, "God is calling me to be a missionary there." And I said, "All right, I'll talk to the mission." I said, this is the way things go. You know, we have an application process, takes a couple months. Then once you get appointed, then we begin raising your support, and maybe take a year and a half. And if we really push it, maybe in a year and a half or 2 years, we can get you down to Guanajuato." And he said, "I said, you understand?" He said, "Yes, I understand that, but I'm leaving on Monday." And I said, "No, we have a process. You don't understand." He said, "No, you don't understand. When God calls you, you don't respond a year and a half later. You respond right away." So, sure enough, Monday came. He loaded up his van and took off to Guanajuato, Mexico. Called me when I was down there. He said, "Well, am I a missionary yet?" And I said, "Well, you haven't even filled out an application yet. You left before I could even get it." So he told me about where he was, and I drove down there. I flew down there and drove and then walked on a dirt road. Finally, I found him. And I walked in this little place, and it was like a 10 by 10 cement cubicle. And I said, "Oh, this is great. You found a little office for us to meet and do the application." He said, "Office where?" I said, "Well, right here." He goes, "This isn't an office. This is my house." He said, "God provided a great house for me. When we came down here, we thought we would have to be sleeping in our car. We didn't know where we were going to sleep. God provided this great house." I said, "Where is it?" And it was this little cubicle. He was praising the Lord. I said, "Pedro, you don't even have a kitchen. Where do you eat?" He goes, "Oh, God is so good. He provided firewood for us. So we get a cookout in the back." And I said, "Pedro, you don't even have a bathroom." And he said, "Oh, God is so good. Look at that wall out there. He provided a brick wall for us." Pedro and his wife are in their mid-50s. I mean, they're not young people. And they're not that old either. So, it's funny. 50s used to be old, and now I'm almost there, and it's not old anymore. But he was just praising the Lord that God provided for him. And, you know, it's amazing. He's planted six now churches in this area where there's been no other missionary or no other evangelical witness. He's your person. When you put money in the offering, part of that money goes to him. You're supporting him. He's your representative in Mexico. And he's doing a fabulous job. Here's his wife, Lorenza. We built him a kitchen, one of the first things. This is Humberto in Honduras. He's the one in the middle, and he's got his team there with him. He's a missionary in the north coast of Honduras. The church association there that's tied in with our church association has over 200 churches. I mean, Honduras is a small country. It's less than half the size of Nevada. It's a fraction of California. But just on the north coast alone, they have over 200 churches, thriving churches along the Mosquito Coast and with the Lenca Indians. I could never do that. None of us could do that. But they have a fantastic ministry, and the churches are just spreading like wildfire throughout that place. He's part of your church. He's your representative in Honduras. One of the ministries, like I mentioned, is among the Lenca Indians. Now, this is as far into the jungle as you can go. When I got there, I said, you know, is this it? And they said, what? I said, I've read about the ends of the earth in the Bible. Is this it? And they said, no, this isn't it, but you can see it from here. So, I mean, it's miles down in the middle of the jungle, right? And the Lenca Indians. Now, the gospel is spreading through the Lenca Indians as a result of the ministry that we're tied in with. This is the parsonage of one of the pastors who's planting a church. There's a pastor and his family standing in the middle of their house there. I don't speak the language. I mean, the Lenca Indians, most of them don't even speak Spanish. But they are Lenca Indian, and they're doing a great job reaching them. Rigoberto in the country of Nicaragua. Maybe some of you have been down there on one of Steve Reed's projects. Nicaragua, Rigo was a missionary, a pastor in Honduras, and felt God calling him to Nicaragua. He went to Nicaragua to begin a church planting movement. There wasn't any church planting movement started. When I found him down there, he was living in a very small, just like a one-room cubicle with his entire family next to a church. I said, Rigo, you have some support raised. You know, why don't you rent a house, you know, or a little bit bigger place? He said, oh, I can't afford it. And I said, well, we're sending you support, right? He says, yeah, but we've got 5 or 6 church planters, and none of them have money, but they're working full-time in the ministry to plant a church. So when my check comes in, I give it out to these guys so I can support them in the ministry of what they're doing. They're doing a great job. They're planting churches all over Nicaragua, and Rigo's leading them. He's doing a great job. He's your person in Guatemala, or in Nicaragua. There's one of the churches. Guatemala, you support Otto. Again, your man in Guatemala. He went down there again, but there's no church association down there. He has 37 churches started. He began an entire church association. And again, they're growing like wildfire all over the jungles and throughout the cities, the dangerous areas of Guatemala. They're there, but churches. Your person in Guatemala. I mean, you guys have been leading the way. And other churches are finally starting to catch on. But your missions department and all of you have been leading the way and supporting these people around the world. You are literally changing the world. So thank you. On behalf of all these guys, thank you for changing the world. And thank you for being so forward-thinking on your missions giving. Good job. I mean, you're doing an excellent job. Keep up the good work. But as these people start new churches, new people get called to the ministry. New people say, hey, you know what? I've been trained. I feel God calling me to be a pastor. I feel God calling me to be a missionary. Well, that presents a problem. New people are being called to missions all the time, but financial support is hard to find. Many churches are saying, you know what? We're supporting as many missionaries as we can, and we can't support anymore. I mean, we're having to cut back on our budget. So I'll say, well, you know, I just appointed 2 people in El Salvador. They're going to do a great job. And 3 people in Nicaragua and another person in Haiti. I said, all these missionaries need support. And I'll talk to people and I'll talk to churches and they'll say, you know, these are hard economic times. Our church can't support. We'll pray for you. We're behind you 100%, but we just can't give any more money to missions right now. We're giving all we can. Well, what do we do? What do we tell these guys? Yes, you can be a missionary, but you can't get paid. There's no money for you available. So what are our options? Stop appointing missionaries? Say, well, the ones we have are the ones we have. We don't have any more funds or money. We can't appoint any new missionaries. Thank you all for being interested in missions, but no, we can't do it. Or do we find another way of supporting missions? I don't want to halt world missions. I don't want to stop appointing new people that are called to the ministry. So we have to find some other way of supporting missions. Well, my first thought was, well, why can't the Hondurans support their own missionaries? Why does it always fall back on us as North Americans? Why can't they take care of their own? So I went to the Honduras and Guatemala and El Salvador, and I said, well, can you guys support your own missionaries? The churches up in the U.S. are giving all they can, and they really can't do anymore. They'd like to, but they can't. And they said, you know, some of our countries have 40, 50% unemployment rate. They said, we can't even really support our own pastor, much less extra money for missionaries to go out and support and plant other churches. They said, we'd love to, but we just can't do it either. So I thought, well, if we can't do it up here anymore, more than we can, and they can't do it down there, then what do we do? Well, I thought, well, what is a large population of our world that has money? And I thought, well, the non-Christians. If the churches here can't and the churches there can't, why don't we get the non-Christians to start supporting ministry? I mean, they have plenty of money, a lot of places, and they have businesses and companies. Why don't they start supporting all of our pastors and all of our missionaries? And somebody said, "Oh, that's ridiculous. That'll never work. You can't get non-Christians to support missionaries. That's just not a possibility. Forget it." And I thought, well, that's our only option at this point. We've got to think of something. So I thought of some sort of economic development project. Small local businesses in these different areas, in different countries, with all the proceeds, 100% of the profit, going to the church planter, going to the missionary, and the small local business will be run by the church. And so that was an idea, and I thought, I wonder if it'll work. You know, I wonder, as I travel around, I wonder if we can pull it off. So I went to Mexico. You know, I lived there in Mexico, and I met with Ildefonso, the Northern Mexico director. And I said, is there anything we can do in this country to generate money for missions that we don't have to go to the U.S.? We can do it ourselves right here. And he looked at me, he said, "Aaron, I have the answer." I'm thinking, oh, this is great. I said, "What's the answer?" He looked at me and he said, "Hot dogs." And I said, "You mean tacos?" He said, "No, hot dogs." I said, "You're going to support missions on a hot dog. I don't get it yet." And he said, "I'll tell you, there was a hot dog stand just down the road from our church. Everybody in the community went to the hot dog stand because they had such good hot dogs. The guy made so much money, he went to the U.S. And maybe he's here, I don't know. And he said, "But everybody still wants the hot dogs, and the hot dogs just aren't available." He said, "If we had $1,000, we could buy that hot dog stand, and $200, we could stock it, and we could start making hot dogs, and we could make money. I'm not sure how much, but we could make money." And he said, "But, I mean, $1,000, it may as well be $1,000,000. We could never find $1,000. And I said, "Well, let me talk to a couple people. You know, maybe people want to chip in $5 or $10 here. Maybe we could raise enough money to buy a hot dog stand." So we did. There's the hot dog stand. That's Ildefonso's wife making a hot dog right there. And $350 a weekend. I had no idea. That's over $1,000 a month for support, for missions, for the church planting pastor. I mean, that would be a lot for a church to come up with, $1,000 a month extra. They're doing it right there. And I said, "Well, you know, how's things going? How, you know, do you need anything else?" He said, "No, we're good. With the $1,000 a month, we're supporting our church planting pastor for this area. And we don't tell the people in the U.S., thanks for the hot dog stand, we're good now. We don't need anything." And I'm thinking, you know, that's the answer. Why haven't we been doing this from the beginning? We should have started doing this 50 years ago, and missions probably would have been taken care of worldwide. But we're just starting, I mean, it's just dawning on us now to look for new areas, new ways to do missions. So they're eating a lot of hot dogs in Mexico, and churches are being planted. I went to Haiti and talked to the Haitian director, Gio. I said, "Is there anything we can do in Haiti? I mean, you know, we're making a lot of hot dogs in Mexico." And he said, "Aaron, Haitians really don't eat hot dogs." And I thought, "Well, what can we do?" Well, you know, he said, "Well, around here, the transportation is our biggest problem. You know, we have a lot of dirt roads, and the roads are all tore up, so everybody goes by moto taxi. And they hop on the back of a motorcycle, and the taxi cab driver takes them where they want, and they, you know, they have a moto taxi business." He said, "If every church could get a motorcycle, the church could run a moto taxi business and earn enough money to fully support their church planting pastor." And I said, "Are you sure?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "How many churches?" He said, "We have 5 churches right now, new church plants. They're all just struggling." And I said, "Well, let me see if I can find you 5 motorcycles, and we'll see what we can do." Well, sure enough, God provided money for 5 different motorcycles. There's 2 of them right there. And these pastors are driving around. The churches are operating this moto taxi business. One of the pastors I was most concerned about when I went down there, I saw him. He was living in a very small house attached to somebody else's house because he couldn't afford to move into a place with his family. I mean, he showed me his shoes that he preaches in had holes in the shoes. And he said, I really don't have money to buy more shoes." And I asked Gio, I said, "Well, how's that guy doing now?" He said, "They're living in a place with their family. He has shoes without holes in them. And the church is doing so well, it's become an independent church, a full-fledged church, instead of a dependent church plant." And I said, "Just with a motorcycle? I mean, a $1,500 motorcycle? This motorcycle, $1,500, right? That's not a lot. Changed the entire future of this church and has changed the ministry in Haiti. These churches are now growing and thriving, doing their moto taxi business. This is what you guys are involved with. This is you guys around the world." That's actually not Haiti. That's Cambodia. But I saw a family of six on this motorcycle. In Cambodia, it's actually not uncommon to see a family of five or six on one motorcycle. And, you know, we have our big cars, and they say, well, it only holds five. There's only five seat belts, or, you know, six with six seat belts. These guys put six people on a motorcycle. Obviously, Cambodians are a little smaller than me. They can't put six of me on one of those, but they do it. Well, speaking of Cambodia, Rada was here last weekend. I talked to Rada. I said, Rada, what can we do in Cambodia? I mean, you're working with over 1,000 churches. I'm sure he told you about that last week. I said, how are we going to finance these new churches and new church plants? And he said, Aaron, I said, you know, we got hot dogs, you know, we got motorcycles. I said, you know, what's going to work? What's Cambodia? And he said, Aaron, I'm thinking, oh boy, here it comes. He said, goats are the answer. And I said, goats? He said, yes, goats are the answer. Goats are the future. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, goats are durable. They're hardy. They eat almost anything. You know, they don't die of sickness real easy. He said, if we had a goat farm with 100 goats, the goats will reproduce fast enough that we can sell the baby goats and supply all of our churches. Not only that, but we'll have money for hospitals because a lot of the hospitals don't have enough medicine. And I said, you can do that with a goat farm. You can supply all the whole northern area. And he said, yes, we can do that with a goat farm. So I thought, okay, well, let's find out. So we raised some money and we bought some land. That's one of the local pastors there standing in the land that we bought for the goat farms. And then it was off to looking, buying goats. I'm the one on the right. So we were looking into buying some goats. And we're checking out these goats as potential goats for the goat farm. You know, we got really into this, and I started thinking, well, you know what? Is this biblical? Is this really biblical? I mean, getting money from non-Christians through these businesses and then giving all the money to the Christian churches. And I had to step back and really ask myself that question. And I realized, Acts 18, Paul the Apostle was a tent maker, and he sold tents to Christians, to non-Christians, to anyone, to partly support his ministry. He did the same idea, economic development. He was selling these tents and supporting ministry with it. So yes, it's biblical. I don't have to worry about that. There's a precedent right there in the Bible that we can do this. And there's other organizations that have started doing this, economic development around the world. But we're doing a little bit different. A lot of them will go in with a preset plan saying, well, this is what we have to offer, and you know, we're going to set it up here in your country, and we're going to run it. And we'll give you some of the profit, but we're going to be running it here from North America, from the U.S. We do it a little bit different. We'll go down to the country, as I've been telling you, talk to the church association and the national director, find out from them what works, rather than coming in with a preset idea, and then put them responsible for overseeing it. They're doing the administration. They're providing the accountability, and all the funds stay in the country, rather than bringing it back to us. So it's set up different. All the accountability is there and all the funds stay in the country for future economic development projects. Okay, I went to the Dominican Republic. When I got there, I was surprised. They said, you know what? We heard about what you were doing and we thought it was a good idea. So we decided to do it on our own. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we bought a water treatment plant. We borrowed the money from a bank, a loan shark, and we're making huge payments. But he said, we decided to open up a water treatment plant. Water, you can't drink the water in Dominican Republic from the tap. So he said, we have this water treatment plant. Everybody comes to us to buy water because we sell it cheaper than everybody else. We give water away free to all the schools in our area. And everybody wants to buy our water. And they set it up right at the church. There's a little water stand right in the corner of the church. And they call it living water or something like that. And so last time I was there, the line was halfway around the block. People lining up to get the water. Do you know how much money they make off selling water? You're not going to believe it. $3,000 a month. $3,000 a month selling water in Santo Domingo. That's a lot of support for missions. I mean, that would be tough for any church to come up with that much extra support. All that money, 100%, is going right into the churches and the church plants. And I'm thinking, you know what? We are really on to something. This is the future. This is it. Couple more countries. Nicaragua. I showed you a picture of Rigo earlier. Nicaragua is one of the poorest countries in the Western Hemisphere, along with Haiti. I asked Rigo, I said, you know, how about Nicaragua? I mean, do you eat hot dogs? Do you ride motorcycles? You know, do you raise goats? What do you do? And he said, well, we are really poor here in Nicaragua. And he said, and especially the area off to the right of Bluefields along the coast there. He said, you know, that's the area that really needs help. But he said, we really don't have anything. All we have is mud, just lots and lots of this really thick mud. So we went over there and talked to the pastor. And we said, you know, is there anything we could do to support church planting and ministry here? And he said, you know what? We have lots of mud. I said, yeah, I see it. It's everywhere. And he said, but if we had one of these, then we could make these. And I thought, oh, that's a great idea. He said, if we got an adobe brick making machine for $1,200, we could get the mud that we have everywhere. We could make adobe bricks. We could build our own churches with our own bricks. And we could make enough bricks to sell to the community for them to build buildings also. And we could support the ministry with an adobe brick machine. I'm thinking, when I saw the mud, I'm thinking, there's no way they could really do much here. But what a great idea. Let's get the mud off the ground that God provided, and let's build churches with the mud. So we sent some money in to the fur brick machine. Honduras, last one. You know, I showed you a picture of Humberto earlier with Honduras. He said, yeah, there's things we can do in this country. I said, well, what can we do? You know, what's going to be most helpful? And among the Lenca Indians, Eric was there. I talked to Eric. And Eric said, all the Lenca Indians grow corn. And then they get the corn and they grind it. They spend hours grinding their corn on the stone. He said, if we had a corn grinder, everybody would bring their corn into the church. We could grind their corn for them and charge them a few lempitas to support the pastor of the church and with a corn grinding business. And I said, how much is a corn grinder? He said, oh, they're expensive. He said, they're like $150 or $200. He said, there's no way that we could ever do that. And I said, well, I might know a couple of friends who might be interested in helping out. He said, that's a lot of money, though. I said, well, let me find out. We got him a corn grinder. I just sent the money last week for the corn grinder. He said, a corn grinder for a couple of $100 will support the ministry with the Lenca Indians. And then just before that, he had mentioned also some oxen. He said, with all the planting that's done, everybody's out there planting by hand. He said, if we had a set of oxen, we could rent out the oxen to different people as they plant their fields. And he said, we could make money to support three or four churches, church planters, just with the oxen. But it was funny because I talked to him just before I came up. And he said, I said, did you get the oxen? He said, oh, yeah, the oxen are working right now. But he said, I got to confess something to you. I said, what? He goes, well, we had a little bit of money left over when we bought the oxen. I said, yeah. And he goes, and we spent it. And I said, oh, well, that's fine. What'd you spend it on? He said, we bought one of these. I said, what'd you buy a cow for? And he said, well, we started getting the idea of this economic development thing, and a number of pastors got together, and we thought, you know, if we had a cow, then we could have milk for the pastor, and the pastor could sell milk to the other Lenca Indians in the village. And then he said, but even more than that, he said, we give the milk to this church family, the cow to the church family, with a commitment that the first offspring from the cow, they would give to another church in another area to provide for them. And then when that cow had an offspring, they would give it to another church. He said, within a few years, the whole area will be covered. Every church will have a cow to provide milk for them to sell the milk, in addition to the oxen. And I'm thinking, well, that's great. I wouldn't even have thought of that. But they're already catching on. They're already ahead of the game thinking, okay, what else can we do? The Garifuna. There's a large community of Garifuna people on the north coast of Honduras, descendants of slaves that originally came over here, and they settled in Honduras. I talked to the Garifuna leader, and he said, you know what? All the Garifuna people do is fish. I mean, we know how to fish, and we know how to fish well, and we can sell fish. But he said, you know, we don't have the boat, you know, our church community here. He said, if you can get me a boat and a motor and two nets, we'll never need another thing again. We'll take it from there because we'll go out and we'll fish. We'll sell the fish to the community and we'll be able to supply our own needs with a boat, a motor, and two nets. And I thought, wow, that is great. That is great. So I told him, I'll see what I can do. I'll mention it to a few people and see if anyone wants to help buy a boat and a motor. But these are some of the things that are going on. This is, you guys have always been out in front in cutting edge missions around the world by supporting indigenous leaders. But this is the next new cutting edge, helping them support themselves. You know, you've heard the saying, if you buy a man a fish, or you give him a fish, he'll eat today. If you teach him how to fish, he'll eat the rest of his life. Well, I realize that's not entirely true because he still needs a fishing pole. If he's going to eat, he may know how to fish, but he still needs a fishing pole. So we're in the business of trying to provide a fishing pole and then letting them go and letting them provide for their missions. Now, like I said, everything is accountable to the local church association. So they're watching over, making sure all the profit goes 100% to missions. Economic development for missions is not new. Paul the Apostle was doing it, but it's the right answer for our time. It's what we need to do around the world to keep missions going full force. Now, it's interesting because when I mentioned this idea to one of the pastors of your church, I'm not going to tell you who because I don't want to embarrass him, but one of the pastors of your church said, you know, I can think of an idea for an economic development project. He said, if I had a bass boat, I could go around to bass tournaments and I could win all these bass tournaments and provide money for missions. So that's not an approved project yet with the mission, but he's wondering if we can approve that project. So, but I'm not going to tell you who because I don't want to embarrass him. we're running out of time. Let me mention one more thing real briefly. I know China. You guys have heard a lot about China. The Olympics were just at China. For years, the underground church has been growing in China. But, being a communist country, they don't have official or allowed official regular churches for missionaries to come over. But one of our missionaries, Benjamin Chen, said, Aaron, I grew up in China. I was raised there, and I was part of the seminary. Before they closed the seminary, I was one of the teachers of the seminary. And he said, I just found out that my students that I taught in the seminary, they made contact with me. And as it turns out now, they've risen up and are in the top government positions in the country of China. I said, really? I said, but it's a communist country. He said, yes, but they're Christians and they're pastors, but they've risen up to the top leadership. And they've invited us to come back to China, me, Benjamin talking, to come back to China and not work with the underground church, but work with the official legal registered church in China as a missionary. And I said, you can't do that. I said, everybody knows China's closed to foreign missions. And, people sneak in through the underground church and do ministry that way. And he said, no, they're asking us and our mission to come in and do ministry in China as missionaries through the front door with the government's approval. And I said, sounds great, but I don't believe it. He said, well, come and see. So I thought, all right, I'll go to China with you and we'll meet with the communist leaders. And I hugged and kissed my family goodbye and told them where the insurance policy was, just in case. And the first night we were there, we met with the director of religious affairs for the country of China, big top communist leader, entourage of 15 people around him. And he looked at me and he said, China needs Christianity. And I said, are you a Christian? He said, nope, and I don't want to hear about it. Don't tell me. He said, but China's economic is really growing economically. And he said, I see us that we need some spiritual guidance to help our economic growth. And he said, I see the spiritual and what Christianity is doing in other countries. He said, China needs Christianity. And if you guys work with Ben, we trust Ben, we know him. If you come in with Ben, you can bring in foreign missionaries to China, and we will give you the government approval to travel around and preach and speak at countries and send missionaries over here. And I said, well, that sounds great, but proof is in the doing. So he said, okay. Take the next couple of weeks and travel around to the different churches. You won't run into any problems. And I said, and if we do, I know about the Voice of the Martyrs webpage. I know what goes on. And he said, I'm going to send a government entourage with you. They will go with you, and they will let everybody know that you represent the government and you don't have any problems. You can go wherever you want. So I said, all right, well, let's try it out. So we went to Guangzhou, the capital, Canton, And went into a church, and the church was probably 3,000 or 4,000 people. They had services all day long, huge church. And I said, we're here. You're here to speak. He said, yeah, I knew you were coming, and it's okay. And the pastor stood up and said, I can't believe I'm doing this, but for the first time in the history of the church, 107 years old, history of our church, I'm introducing a foreign speaker to come and speak from the pulpit. He said, it's never happened before. And I went up, and I didn't get I didn't get, you know, no problems. I didn't get hassled or anything. And I spoke from the church there. And we ran around and we visited probably 10 or 11 different churches. And the same response, they welcomed us with open arms because they knew we had permission. So I came back and I said to the mission, I said, man, we got to do this. We got to be on China. We got to be all over this. What a great opportunity. And people were going, well, I don't think so. They said, yeah, it sounds like a great opportunity, but it's too good to be true. The government doesn't allow that. I said, but they did. I spoke at one of the churches. We spoke at the seminary. And they said, well, you may have thought you did, but you probably didn't. And I said, I was there. So we decided to have a vision trip next summer for people, not just for people who want a vacation, but for people who are seriously interested in China and seriously wanting to be involved with ministry in China with a registered legal church. We've got a vision trip coming up to visit some of these churches and speak and meet with some of these top leaders. So I just thought I'd mention that if you're interested. Also, if you want to read more about economic development, there's some flyers in the back over there too. Thank you so much for changing the world. I mean, you're literally changing the world with your cutting-edge missions and supporting these guys. You may not have realized it, but hopefully you realize it now, that the world is a different place now because of your involvement around the world. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Hey, I like that bass boat idea. Wonder who we could get to do that. Just sitting there listening to all that, I mean, we could go on even more. I don't know if you're aware of it, but when you buy those foo-foo drinks over there from the youth, part of that money even goes to, they're raising one of the well projects in Cambodia. Plus, they've done, I think, several goats. And here's an idea I forgot to tell the 9 o'clock crowd. Last year, my family, our adult kids, and my wife and I decided, you know, we have enough junk. We don't need more junk for Christmas. That, you know, it just kind of accumulates things, and then you got to take care of it, and, you know, all that stuff. And so we decided instead of buying the adults of the family more stuff that we don't need, we just pitched in and bought a couple of goats. And, you know, so there's some creative ways out there that very little, from our perspective, can be multiplied to go a very long, long way. I would really encourage you, pick up one of the flyers. There's some back on the Get Connected table, so don't forget that one. Don't forget Angel Tree. That's another one of those ripples that goes out there. There's some more flyers out in front, too, if you happen to miss that. But, you know, it goes back. One of my favorite verses is becoming 1 Peter 4:10. It says, to each one should use whatever gift he has received to serve others, faithfully administering God's grace in all its various forms. And you've heard how some of that is happening in the world. And just like I said, a lot of little things from our perspective are turning into some very significant ripples out there as we just take those little graces even that God has bestowed on us and use them to advance the good news about Jesus and to honor him with whatever it might be, whatever interest it is, whatever skills, whatever money, it just keeps going on and on. And I think it bears stating also that with our budget crunch that we've experienced here, that we have cut everything in our church budget. We've cut, ministries, and we've cut the bulletin down. We're splurging this month on color covers, but I thought it was important enough for that. We've cut staff salaries. We've cut everything except our support to our missionaries. We have not touched that, and we won't touch that because I think God will take care of our needs if we honor the ones that are out there really on the front lines. And so I just want to say thank you also and encourage you. Look into your life and see what are the graces that God has bestowed on you that you can use to serve others. Let's pray. Lord, thank you so much for the honor and the privilege of serving you and for taking those little things. I mean, $200, some of us have probably spent that on sushi in one night. And yet you take it and multiply it and multiply it, and it keeps growing and it keeps harvesting fruit for the kingdom of God, and just causing many to rejoice. Thank you for the honor and the privilege of participating with you in that, for taking our humble offerings and those little things in our lives and just humbly using them to honor you, and then you do great things with them. Thank you so much for that. In Jesus' name, amen.